regional banks around the world print money. And they don't physically print that money. They basically add zeros, digital zeros, to their balance sheets. It's unusual for things like that to happen. I mean, that just really highlights how much of a bizarre world we're living at the moment.
Too many times as entrepreneurs ignore what's happening in the political world because we don't want to get dragged down into the mess. But more today than ever before, we need to have a voice. Otherwise, we're going to be left behind. I started Learn exactly for this reason. So starting today with Freedom Friday, let me be your voice. What's up, you crazy fighting entrepreneurs? Welcome back to another Freedom Friday. Today, we're going to talk about the stock market and what the heck is going on with it and who is controlling it, if anyone. I think something's going on. I don't know. Doesn't make sense to me. I've been watching it for weeks now. I've been calling the shots and I've been wrong every time. And it just seems really weird, strange. And it's, I don't know. Well, we're going to find out what's going on. Now, again, remember, if you're not a member of our Learn community, LURN.com, get over there. All the entrepreneurs, all the cool kids are there. All the cool entrepreneurs are right now inside of Learn.com. All right. So in this Freedom Friday, we're going to talk about the market. We're going to talk about the economy. We're going to talk about the trillions of dollars that are being thrown around like Skittles, which is just, I think to myself, in the future, I'll tell my kids about this day and, you know, this is one of those stories that our grandparents probably told us and we don't understand. But before we get started, let's do something new today that I've never done before. I'm going to do my opening thoughts. So why exactly are we talking about the market right now? About a month and a half ago when all of this started, the first thought that came to my head when they said, we're going to shut the economy down. We're going to shut stores down. We're going to shut restaurants down. You stay in your house, can't go outside. Unemployment's going to hit 20 to 30%. I just want you to process that for a minute. We went from below 3% or around 3% unemployment and are saying could go as high as 30%. The first thought that came to my mind was, oh my God, the sky is falling. We are going to absolutely have a catastrophe on our hands. Stores cannot be walked into for weeks, not months. Neiman Marcus recently declared bankruptcy. So many others that I was expecting would declare bankruptcy but haven't yet. You talk about the fact there's no travel. You talk about the fact that hotels are literally closed. Airlines are not functioning. How is it possible that our market has stayed as stable as it has? Which, look, it only fell about 23% or something from its high. That's not nearly as high as, that's not nearly the drop I was expecting or thinking. So that leads me to wonder, is this truly an optimistic market? Do people really believe that our economy is just going to V-shape right back and bounce right back in the next month or two and it's going to be like this never happened? Every single person that lost their job is just going to get their job right back. Every business that went down in business is just going to springboard right back. Let me ask you a question. Next week, if the movie theater opened, are you likely to go see a movie? The truth is, I'm not. Next week, if the restaurant's nearby open, are you likely to go sit in the restaurant and eat? No, I'll just order in again. Next week, are you likely to go to your department store and try on clothes? Clothes you have no idea who just tried on before you? So even if we open this economy back up, how many of us are going to participate in this new open economy? And how are we going to participate in it? So how can we assume that those jobs and everything is just going to bounce back like a V shape? It doesn't make any sense to me. So if that's the case, I would have expected the market to be way below 20,000 by now, but it's not. And something tells me there could be another hand at play that is keeping it like that. And that's great. Thank you, mysterious hand, for keeping the market stable. I sure as heck don't want it to drop below 20,000. I don't want it to drop at all. God knows my own father is going to retire soon. He spent his entire life building up his account and saw 20%+ of it vanish before his eyes. Not that I'm wishing for any of this, but I want to prepare for it because in my mind, I feel like the market, we've not seen what it really should be. And this invisible hand that seems to be keeping it, you know, hoisted up, how long can it do that? Is it going to leave us one moment? And is then when the market's going to really crash? So these are the questions that I want to explore today. And I've brought in today my very good friend, someone we talk every day with tremendous knowledge about just this. You know, since late 1990s, he's been trading in the market. He's been a hedge fund manager, but more importantly, he has traded in every kind of economy you can imagine, the good, the bad. He's made millions, he's lost millions, and he has watched the market. And for some reason, he enjoys it. Don't ask me why, but he loves every minute of it, and he watches every minute of it. And he's tried to teach me how to do it, and I can't understand it. So I prefer to just ask him what I'm supposed to do. So today, we're going to talk, and I'm going to see if he knows something about what the heck is going on in the market. So without further ado, help me welcome to Freedom Friday my good friend, Phil Newton. Phil, what's going on, my friend?
Oh, what a lovely, warm introduction. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Phil, come on, man. Out with it. What's going on? Why is the market not performing at the level of fear that I have in my head?
There's so many ways to answer this question, and you could answer it with a tinfoil helmet on is the first one. Or you could try and practically answer it and still you sound crazy. And I don't think there's any single right way, because there's so many ways to answer it. It's most basic quantitative easing. And that's the phrase that's touted around. It's because of quantitative easing, which is really the fancy way of saying central banks and Fed in the US is printing money. You know, it's like, and the single justification that I have in my mind is that when you've got more of something, it's usually worth less. So as you were just touching on, it's like, it baffles the mind why the markets not only are going up, but they're going up exponentially. That's the real concern, not the fact that they're going up. It's that the speed of the movements is a concern. I personally think that we're setting ourselves up for a harder fall. I don't want it to happen. Nobody wants these things to happen. But it just seems that it's going to happen. And as you were saying, you know, you can't shave essentially 20% off the bottom of an economy and not have that impact the economy. And I'm looking at this through the lens of the financial markets, and it's crazy times. There's no way to describe it. And everyone just keeps calling it quantitative easing. It's fine, because we've seen it before. We saw it in 2008, and that was a good thing back then.
What is this term you're using? I've never heard it before. Constant what?
Quantitative. It's my weird accent. Quantitative okay. Easing.
Quantitative easing. Okay. The other thing everyone who's listening has to understand is he's really smart. Phil is a little extra smart. So we're going to have to bring him back sometimes. Quantitative something, something. What is that? Like, why does that explain it to people? Because I'm not saying that. I don't even know what it means.
Well, you and me both, because in 2008, I had to look it up as well. Quantitative easing is a fancy, long mouthful of a word. And again, as it most basic, it means that the central banks around the world print money. Now, they don't physically print that money. They basically add zeros, digital zeros, to their balance sheets. And, you know, they then do something with that money. So part of it is they want to spend it in the economy. And it doesn't mean that the government is going to go out and stop. Well, I was going to say they're going to stop. They're not going to send everyone checks, but they've just done that. It's unusual for things like that to happen. I mean, that just really highlights how much of a bizarre world we're living in at the moment. But what quantitative easing, what central banks will generally do is they'll spend money in the form of, they'll buy something like bonds back from other funds that have already invested in government bonds. And that has an impact where it's going to lower interest rates, which makes it great for you and me. We can go and borrow money at lower interest rates. And this is what happened in 2008, where, you know, we would spend our way out of a financial issue. But this isn't a financial issue this time. The pause button has been pressed on the economy. And it's not a financial issue like it was back then. It's a health issue, you know. And so what the government's going to do is they're going to buy bonds. They're going to basically give that money to pension funds, for example, who have investments in government bonds, and the government's going to have them back. Now, the hedge funds, the institution, the pension funds, the people who look after your retirement accounts, they've now got this big pool of cash, and they're being, I'm going to use the air fingers here, they're being encouraged to buy stocks and shares.
Okay.
Pressure. They've had the pressure on. They've got to do something with that money. And part of it, it's not all, but part of it is that they're buying companies, anything. They've got so much cash, they're buying anything. And we're seeing that translated into a rally, because to come back to something that you teach is economics. When you've got greater demand for something, that creates a trend and the price of that goes up. Real world example, a few years ago, fidget spinners. Everyone went crazy for them.
Okay.
With the economy.
So a question. So I was watching the news this morning and they said something to the tune of, this is related to the United States, that the government's thrown out about $7 trillion so far into the economy, which I was confused by because I know that they did the $2.3 trillion dollar package. They just passed another close to $500 billion package. So that gets you up to close to $3 trillion, sorry. I'm not sure how we get to seven. And I feel like, is that missing $4 trillion? Is that the one that they don't tell us about, but they just kind of behind the scenes pass on to the banks and pass on to the hedge funds?
The honest answer is I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know the answer.
Let me ask this question in a different way. So when the government, so right now they go to Congress, they'll go to Congress, they'll go to the president to get approvals for this money that they're giving away, right? Like, in order for them to do the thing that you just talked about, which is literally injecting cash into the market, it almost seems like a loophole. Do they need congressional approval for that? Or is that something that could be happening behind the scenes and we wouldn't even know about it?
It happens behind the scenes and you wouldn't even know about it, as far as I'm concerned. they do generally announce that they are applying quantitative measures or quantitative easing, or there's another round of QE. That's what you'll see in the news, is usually how it's phrased. As I understand, what you're talking about in the US is a little bit different. They're going to Congress to make money, like actual money available for businesses to basically survive on through this tricky situation. So what quantitative easing is, it's a little bit different to making money available to regular people on the streets.
So it was interesting because a few weeks ago, I was talking to someone and they said, hey, did you know that the Federal Reserve is injecting $1 trillion a day into the economy? And I heard that and I thought, that's ridiculous. What are you talking about? It's not even possible because we'd hear about it. And this was even before the $2.3 trillion or whatever was passed. So I guess that's what it could be. That is what they meant. And can it be at that number? So a government, like they could actually right now, it's possible that they could be injecting $1 trillion through quantitative easing into the market?
The short answer is yes, it's happening. It's a reality, unfortunately. But like just to kind of put what's going on, I like to try and compare things to kind of real world. Let's just say that a business, regular business, your business, my business, whoever's watching this is business, you added a few zeros onto your balance sheets, it would be illegal. it's called fraud. You know, but because the government does it and the central bank do it around the world, it's okay. But it is crazy when you put it into a different context. That's what printing money means. They're making more money available, but they're not physically printing it. It's not being made available to the guy on the street. It's being given to the institutions, the fat cats is often how it's described. You know, they're the people that are doing it.
How can this go wrong? So give me an example. Like, it sounds fine to me so far. I don't really care. They're keeping the market up. I appreciate the fact that they're keeping my portfolios from crashing. They're giving this money as a loan, I guess, right? Because you said it's a note. So they're giving it as a note to these banks or to these hedge funds. Is there somewhere here, am I missing something? Can this money does it become my headache as a taxpayer? Or where can this whole thing go wrong? It just sounds, I'm listening to you right now and I'm like, why don't they just do this every day, even in a good economy? They should just keep doing it.
Well, they've been doing it. That's the point. It's not the first time that they've done this. In 2008, this was the solution. And, it's happened various stages through history where, okay, we need to readjust the balance sheet. We need to make more cash available. And it happened in one of the bigger ways in 2008, where printing more money, make it available, give it to the banks, give it to the institutions. And what's supposed to happen is it's supposed to trickle down, because when when this QE happens, governments buy back the bonds, that pushes interest rates lower, cash becomes available in the markets. That means that banks and institutions can get money at a low price. And what's supposed to happen is that they're meant to make it available to business owners at favorable interest rates. But that never happened. That didn't happen in 2008. And that was one of the issues. It was supposed to be injected into the economy and they sat on cash. And that, I don't know if you remember, Alec, but there was a lot of uproar back then about why isn't this cash available? Because businesses need it. And the positive thing is that they're trying to make it available as quickly as possible this time. So on a bright side, the learning from the most recent time it happened, which is 2008, where something similar, something comparable happens. So, you know, the governments, they're trying to make it available, but where could it go wrong, to answer your question? If it was just one country that was doing this, if one country was having an issue with their economy at large and the solution was to print more money, then when you've got more of something, practically, economics 101, it's worth less. So it would devalue the currency, imports and exports, the prices of imports and exports go out of balance, and it causes all sorts of interest, stagflation, inflation. You know, it has a dramatic impact on the economy when it deals with the rest of the world. Now, what's different again this time is that the whole world is in the same situation. So the whole world central banks are printing money at approximately the same rates. Again, it's not real money. It's literally monopoly money that they're adding to the balance sheets. I keep coming back to this point, when you've got more of something, it should be worth less, but because the whole world is printing more money, they're getting away with it. So the main concern, it's a fine line, a fine balance, where if something goes out of sync with the rest of the world, it could have a dramatic impact to the economy from imports or exports. And we're already seeing that because the world's economy has had the pause button pressed. As you were saying, no one's going anywhere. No one's spending money. So even if, again, another example of this is just last week, I don't know if you saw the headlines with the prices of oil. It was compared to being cheaper than toilet paper at the moment.
I saw it.
But this is an example where when you've got more of something and no one wants it, it becomes worthless. You know, and that's a very dramatic impact. But that happened. It's not fantasy, like thinking about a possibility of what could happen. We're seeing the impact of all of these implications of an economy having the world's economy having a pause button pressed. Consumerism has gone to effectively zero. People are buying what they need instead of what they want. And that has such a huge impact. You know, they couldn't give oil away at one point. It was one of the things.
So Phil, let me ask you this then. So basically I thought by now, and I feel like I sound like a negative Nancy or a worry wart, but I'm just being honest in what I thought would happen. I thought more businesses, more companies would have gone out of business by now. And they haven't. So that's good. At least businesses out there have had some money that they've saved and stored away. My challenge is that even if they start to open things up, as we know now, at least in the US, some states are opening up, even internationally in Europe, some things are opening up in some countries. It's just going to be so slow and so stretched out. And even the fear of how many people will actually jump back in. I don't feel like a lot of companies and businesses are going to be able to survive the stretched out opening. So they're going to start to see a rollout of more bankruptcies and more people losing their jobs and more companies going under. And so at some point that's got to hit the market, right? Or are you telling me that they could just keep doing this, this easing and just keep putting money in so the market will stay where it is? Or are you thinking right now, are you bearish? Are you thinking the market's going to crash?
I want to give my tinfoil helmet answer. in the short, there's a couple of ways of answers. Long term, to not panic anyone, we will get through this. Yep. Long term, months, years, we've survived similar situations through history. And we're going back a thousand years. History will teach us a lesson. So to not panic anyone, although it is living through it, it's very concerning, which is why we're talking about it. But long term, couple of years down the line, we'll look back on this, as you were saying, we'll be telling people stories about the time that we survived this period of our lives. So we will get through it. It will happen. But in the very short term, my time horizon, and again, bear in mind, I'm looking at things through the lens of the financial markets. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking to profit from swings in prices. That's how I make my living. And in the short term, between 4 and 6 months, I can only see negativity. I can only see what is termed as a bear market. I have great difficulty in being bullish, and I'm an optimist at heart. You know me. When we've spoken, I'm always looking for the bright side. Yeah. I'm always wanting to be positive, but I can't see it in the short term. So there's going to be a lot of short-term pain, and we've been talking about it several times. there's going to be what I refer to as a retest of these lows. The move that the stock market crashed down to and that bottom, that's going to be, you know, retested essentially.
And what was that? What was that number?
I should know these things off the top of my head. Do you want the, in relation to the Dow? We've got around about 18,000 on the futures prices, which is what I'm looking at. So about 18,000 on the Dow futures.
Got it. So you feel like that's going to be retested. So right now we're sitting at, you know, at the time that we're filming this, everybody, you're listening to it a few days later, but at the time we're filming this, it's sitting at 24,000 something. So there is a, in your eyes, it could be a possible 6,000 or more drop to test that bottom over the next coming few months.
At its extreme, it could get down there. Somewhere between half and all the way there is what I would be looking at. That's what I'm expecting.
What do you think would trigger that? Like what would be happening in order to make that likelihood happen? Like, is it continued unemployment? Is it continued shutdown? Is it more bankruptcies? What could people be watching for to catch a whiff?
For the moment, it could be a combination. I'd like to try and say something along the lines of under normal circumstances, under a normal crash, if there is such a thing. but under normal circumstances, because what we're seeing now, it's unprecedented. You know, I can't find a time in history where an economy, the world's economy has had that. I keep referring to it as the pause button's being pressed. And I can't look to history to see when something similar happened. So under normal circumstances, there's usually one thing, and it's easy to say this is likely to happen. We can't say for certain what will or won't happen, but the best we can ever say is this is probably going to be the cause. At the moment, there's so many possibilities, so many combinations. It could be, I mean, right now, US looking at 22 million unemployed. That's unprecedented for the start of what is referred to as a bear economy. It's usually low single digits as a percentage. Low digits is an actual number, but out the chute, as it were, 22 million because of this situation. And in
I think it's actually 26 million now.
It's up since the last time I looked.
Yeah.
So it's 26 million. So what I'm talking about is previous crashes, and just in relation to unemployment, previous crashes, previous sell-offs, previous difficult times, bear markets, however you want to phrase it, they've seen unemployment levels go up. And that, as difficult as it may be, it's normal for a period of economic contraction. And we've had that economic contraction accelerated over a 6-week period. And right now we're looking at, as you said, 26 million unemployed. Now, what normally happens next when we go into a bear market is that those numbers go up. And previously it's gone from the low single digits into double digit unemployment as a percentage of the population. So from 2 million, it goes into, which is about 1%, it goes into the 10 million, which would be a double digit. We're already at 22 million. We're already halfway to, you know, double digits unemployment. It's difficult to be optimistic when you know it's coming because businesses are closing. Yeah. It's not a case of they may do in an economic contraction. It's happened. You know, we don't need to speculate on what may or may happen if a bear market happens. No one's buying anything. There's no consumerism. The pause button's being pressed. Businesses are going out. We've already had a huge spike in unemployment. So just that one factor alone, I would have to be bearish in the very short term. Other things that are a possibility, we're going to have, when I say we as a global economy, because that's what we are these days, We're gonna have these lockdowns lifted, staged. It's good, you know, if they were to release the floodgates and go, everything's fine, go back to work. That's gonna create a potential opportunity for this virus to spike again, and that could also be a trigger for another downturn in the financial markets, which will lead to a down. Again, it's gonna create panic. We already saw what happened previously, mm-hmm. So that could be another trigger. So this is one of the challenges from the governments around the world. How do we allow people to go back to some normalcy? You're already seeing in the US, you know, marches to go back to it, to, you know, lift the lockdown. We're already seeing those around the world. But if they just open the door, then that's going to create another possible trigger for a bear market.
So
I can't see anything other than a short-term bearish outlook.
So basically, you're saying it's going to take a trigger, and that would create a possible panic. So unemployment shoots up all of a sudden because, you know, seven big companies announce massive bankruptcies or whatever. And that creates a reality check of, businesses are going to now go under. Or, like you just said, states are opening up in the U.S., you know, something could happen and you see a massive spike up in the disease, in the coronavirus again, and that settles into people the reality of, oh my God, this is where we are for months to come, not for weeks. Right now, people still feel like, oh, we got some optimism, you know, and hopefully, I trust me, I'm ready to get out of this house. So hopefully we can, but that could trigger. Like, it could just be one massive spike report and boom, it triggers. Could be a major company that goes out of business and boom, that triggers. And so let me ask you this then, and I've asked you this question, for example, for my father, right, who has a retirement account that he has seen get depleted. There's a lot of people right now that are wondering, what should they do? You hear this all the time, buying opportunity, buy low, do what Warren Buffett does. Is it low? Is it the right time? Should I be buying right now? Should I be selling right now? Should I sit on my butt, wait, watch and see what happens? So what, Phil, should people be doing right now?
I think what we can do, first of all, is we can look at what those headline names. Is Warren Buffett buying right now? No. Is Charlie Munger, his number two guy, is he buying anything? They've outright said, we're not buying anything. Ray Dalio, I can't remember his name. Ray Dalio, he's, again, been outspoken about this whole situation. One of the world's best investment fund managers in the world at the moment, so long track record, isn't buying anything. We'll want to be optimistic for the future, but they're not investing in the markets. And when you start looking at the numbers, and if you're a little bit of a nerd like me, and you go and look at what the hedge funds are doing, you know, there's few hedge funds that are actually genuinely buying the dip, is how it's phrased. Are they investing? Are they buying at it? Again, Warren Buffett talks about it, buy things when they're at a discount. Yes, they're at a discount. Yes, prices have sold off, but are we at the bottom? That's the question I'm asking. And it's the question that we've danced back and forth on, you know, are we here yet? Are we here yet? Again, in the short term, I can't see anything other than markets moving lower to retest lows. What happens after that? I'll evaluate it when it gets there, if it gets there.
Is it as simple as watching those guys? Like, can we keep it that simple? Like, just put these people on your news alerts, on Google alerts, and start seeing when they're buying something, and then you kind of get a gauge of might be time to buy.
If you're being passive about your investments, then that can be as simple as you make it. You know, when they start spending their money and investing in the markets, then that might be a good time to join the party. I'm not saying that you should just automatically copy what they're doing, but if your investment strategy suggests that this is whatever you're looking at is a good opportunity, and the big headline names are also investing in the markets, then yeah, that might be good timing. That's usually how it's referred to. To try and answer your question a bit more succinctly, there's a couple of ways of answering it. If you have got a retirement fund and you've got many years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, if you're a younger person, then this is a blip on the charts. You know, as we said earlier, we'll weather the storm, we will get better, we will see through it. And if you're at the early stages of your retirement account, and you don't need it in the short term, in the foreseeable future, in the next couple of years, then there's probably nothing to worry about. And again, as crazy that might seem to say that, the market is on an ever-increasing upward slope. If you can wait long enough, the markets recover. 2008, it took several years to recover. So it will happen, but it's, have you got time is the next question.
All right. So I got some specific questions to you. And then I do want to talk to you about something you said before, which was that you make money on the swings. I want to talk about that for a little bit. Sure. But just to recap, so everyone watching, likely chance, at least Phil was to bet his experience on it. Now he calls it his tinfoil hat moment. We can't ever know, and no one will hold Phil responsible for it. I won't, and you can't hold me responsible because what do we know? But based on pure history, based on pure experience, based on some logic, based on some common sense, we still feel like the market, there's a good chance it's going to drop more. Plus, then you watch what the experts are doing, what the true, true billionaires are out there doing, and they're sitting on their money. They're literally sitting on it. And so you feel like, why would they be sitting on it if they thought the market was going to go up from here? Well, they don't. They obviously must think it's going to drop and they're waiting for the drop so that they can buy more. So having said that, I feel pretty confident about that. Now, I do want to ask you a couple of specific questions. And Phil, you're going to laugh about this one because I've been on this asking you about it for like weeks now. I don't know why. I'm standing here, I'm staring at United Airlines. And not that long ago.
This one again.
Not this one again. I know, but you got to help me through with this because in January 16th of 2020, it's not that long ago, $89, almost $90 a stock. It's currently sitting at 25. It's down like 72%. And I just can't help. Now, it may fall more. I'm not saying it's not going to fall more, but I'm sitting here thinking, I just want you to check my logic. Am I just being way overly optimistic? My head says United Airlines cannot go out of business. I just don't see a world in which the government allows United Airlines to go out of business. Now, I might be completely off and completely wrong because I also never saw a world in which the government would send out $2 trillion in checks. So what the heck do I know? But I just can't see a world without. So I'm sitting here thinking, holy moly, United's at a 72% discount. Some of these, I got to buy this thing. Is my logic too simplistic or is there something to it?
I think when it comes to investments, that's a great starting point. Again, I'm trying to separate what I do, which we'll talk about in a moment, which is to profit from swings and not really look at what the company is. I don't really care. But when we're looking at a company, if that's your viewpoint, if you truly believe that you can't see a world without United, and at the moment, that might not necessarily be a bad thing. Again, keep in mind the situation. You know, just the US economy, world economy, pause button's being pressed. They're going to need transport. They're going to need infrastructure. They will need infrastructure, and that's the kind of the transportation between cities, flights, and all the rest of it. So that will need to. So you're quite possibly right. Again, I can't say for certain. No one can say for certain. But the best we can ever say is that's a fairly good hypothesis to work with. So if United is in a world in the future, 2 years down the line, then maybe these are great prices for you. And that's the difference between. Or that again, that's the start point for an investment strategy. And this is something that Warren Buffett talks about. Only invest in things that you understand. And this is something that you understand. I can't. And if you truly believe that you can't see a world without United because of a list of reasons A, B, C, D.
I'd like to see a world without United. I just want to be very clear.
From a user point of view, it's a different story.
Not a fan of United, but practically, I can't see a world without United. Okay.
But that's a good point. That's a long-term investment idea. And that is a great place to start. And that is truly how I look at picks. I like, for similar reasons, I like Disney. I like Hilton Hotels. These are all stocks that we've spoken about. Am I putting my money in the market yet? No. I don't think now's that. So I'm not prepared to... I refer to it as step in front of a bus. I'm not going to step in front of a moving bus. And right now the moving bus is pointing downwards. I'm not prepared to do that. I'm prepared to sacrifice a little bit of movement just to say, all right, like I want to invest. I want to buy. And it's starting to move my way, not on a knee-jerk reaction, but maybe it's starting to head up. And if you try and catch the bottom, if you try and pick the bottom, that is a fool's errand. But if you just wait for a little bit of a lag, wait for that little bit of certainty, if you think it's going to get back at least half of what it's lost, you're still going to make a good investment. Yeah, it's still going to be a good trade.
All right. So basically, it's now I know for a fact that you're not the types to sit on your money. You do have a strategy. It's interesting. It confuses me, but it's interesting, and I definitely want to talk about it. There we go. All right. So, there are ways to make money right now, though, in the market. Just because the market is in an uneasy place, or just because the market, realistically speaking, we don't know if the market will go up or tomorrow. Tomorrow it could go up and you'd be like, well, I was completely wrong. And, that invisible hand that was guiding it just slapped me across the face and took the market. Or it could completely crash and you'd say, oh, that was right. Like, I knew this was coming, but you don't know which way it'll go. So that's why people are sitting on their hands, but I don't want to sit on my hands. So I want to make money during this market. So Phil, can people make money right now from the market, even without knowing which way it's going to go really long term?
Yes, because I don't know which way it's going to go. And I've made a 20-year career off doing that.
So talk to us about that. How do you make money in an unknown market? That sounds crazy to me. People always feel like you got to know either up or down. That's the only way to make money. How do you make money?
it can be done, first of all. Just know, even if you're not sure, just know, first of all, that it can be done. For a lot of new people who looking at the market as maybe a new idea, there's also the second way or another way that you can make money, which is as well as profiting from investing or buying, hoping for a stock to increase, you can also profit from a downward movement. You may have heard in the news it's referred to as short selling or short sellers. Usually Tesla's mentioned the same phrase because everyone likes to bash on them. But you can profit from movements both going up and going down. So when you've got that base understanding, then what we're trying to do is find swings in price. I mentioned fidget spinners, and I like to try and compare these things to things that go on in the real world. Fidget spinners was, what do you reckon, Annick? Was it about a 4 or a 6 month trend in e-commerce?
About maybe a little bit longer, but yeah, about that much.
Yeah, it was about 4 to 6 months. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to find a trade idea that is like a fidget spinner. It's going to have a 4 to 6 month trend, and then I'm done with it. And I don't care what the name of the stock is. I don't care if the price is going from a low price to a high price. I don't care if it's a bad company, it's going to go from a high price to a low price, because I can profit from those swings in price. And that's, that, unsurprisingly, it's called swing trading. Now, I'm not doing one trade at a time, like you might do, because one of the things that you teach, Annick, is Facebook ads. You're not going to put one ad on at a time and hope that that's the one that works.
Yeah.
You would have a portfolio with different titles, different hooks, maybe a few different images. You're going to split test maybe a dozen different ideas and find out which is the right combination that works for a Facebook ad. So that's what I want to do in my portfolio. Again, I don't truly know what's going to work. What I do know is that if I have a trade and it sets up, I'm going to put that one on there. I'm going to put this one on here. And maybe that one works out. Maybe it doesn't. But I'm looking for an average. I'm looking to try and run the winners and add more budget. I'm using the advertising analogy. I don't know how I ended up here, but I'm going to add more budget to the winning ads, and I'm going to cut the losing ads. So that's the same thing that I'm trying to do in the stock market. You know, it's just a comparable analogy to, you know, to how we actually work. If the markets go up, great. If the markets go down, great. It doesn't matter as far as I'm concerned.
So for everyone listening, it's basically like options trading, futures trading, all this crazy stuff that you can do, calls, puts. I don't get all of it, but I'll tell you who does. And that's Phil. The cool thing about working with Phil on this stuff is you don't have to understand it. It just tells you what to do and you just do it. That's what we've been doing for quite some time, and it's worked well. So I very rarely ever pitch anyone or promote things, but I do want to hear, because he's that good. And if you want to know how to survive this market and actually thrive in this market, he's actually the person that I talk to every day about this. And you can go to his website, antivestor.com, V-E-S-T-O-R.com, antivestor.com. It's basically, you know, the opposite of an investor. He's going to teach you the simple ways of doing things. And he puts out a regular newsletter. He does trainings all the time. And so I can vouch as a student and a friend that it's an amazing place to go. So go to antivestor.com. If you want to learn how to be able to make money in this crazy market that we think we agree on, it's probably going to go down, but we don't know. So how about this? How about we profit on it no matter which way it goes, up or down? And then once we see the right trend, like what I love what Phil said, and I want you to catch that. He said he's ready to sacrifice a little bit of the movement. So let's say it goes down, right? And you're like, I want to catch it at the bottom. I want to catch it. I want the best deal ever. Phil says, nah, I don't want the best deal ever. I want to see it hit the bottom. I want to see it curve back up. And I want to see it show me the signs that this is it. I'll skip a little bit of the margin at the bottom and I'll catch the big wave here, but do it safely without taking the risk. So what you can do is follow Phil right now. If the market goes down or goes up, you can actually trade actively, little trades here and there in the up and down movements, and he'll show you how to do those. And then once you see the big movement coming, you can attack and do what it is that you want to do. But I want you all to understand that there are other hands at play that are stabilizing the market. And so the market's current condition may not adequately or accurately reflect the actual feeling by the normal people and by the actual business environment and what's happening in the business environment. So Phil, thank you so much, my friend, for being here. It's always an honor to talk to you. Antivestor.com, everybody, go find Phil, grab his knowledge, make money with him and learn from him. I tell you, he is doing it right now. He's currently actively trading and making money. All right, everybody. Thanks for being here with us for this Freedom Friday. I'll see you on the next one when we talk about other things. I'm sure will be coronavirus related because that's just what our world is absorbed in right now. This is Onyx and God reminding you, when life pushes you, stand straight, smile, and push it the heck back. Getinsidelearn.com, LURN.com. I'll see you there. Signing off. Go out there. Fight for your dreams every single day. Coronavirus or not, stuck at your home or not, there's no excuse to not keep fighting for your dreams. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to The Fighting Entrepreneur with your host, Onyx Singhal.